Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, you remember after the tragic events of New Year's Eve, New Year's Day of 2025, and even here recently talking about the amount of overtime that has been spent during that period of time to ensure the safety and security of people visiting the city, whether it was Saints games, whether it was the Super Bowl, Mardi Gras, or otherwise. We talked about these barricades, these bollards that are on Bourbon Street. And it turns out that there are images of people that are easily moving this stuff. And a lot of it has been caught on Project NOLA cameras, which has been one of the most successful programs that we've seen as it relates to cameras throughout the city. And joining us is Brian Lagarde, Executive Director of Project NOLA, to talk about this. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Brian, first, what is it that you've been able to see on your cameras?
As you said, we're seeing where people are able to easily move the barricades. We're seeing vehicles traveling on Bourbon Street after hours when it's closed to vehicular traffic. Vehicles traveling through large crowds of people to get from one point to another.
Actually, last week I saw that happen. I didn't realize it until after the fact when I made my way back around to another cross street closer, deeper into the quarter where the barrier was up. And I was like, wait a minute, that barrier over there was closed. Why would they have one closed, one open? And I guess it wasn't until, this was reported, I said, wow, well, it wasn't. It wasn't supposed to be, right?
Yep. Surprise. So what's happening is sometimes it's people who park their vehicle on Bourbon before it's closed down. They return back to their vehicle. They find the barricades up. They get in a car, start it, drive through the crowds, make it down to the end of the block to the barricade, push it open, get out. Or it could be just the opposite, where sometimes we see people that really want to drive onto Bourbon Street for one reason or another. It might be something benign, like they want to just show off their show car. And they move the barricade out of the way, and they jump onto Bourbon Street and drive through the crowds. So, of course, everyone's concerned in the back of their minds. We don't want to have another January 1st. But also, some of these individuals might be driving while intoxicated, and they're going through crowds. It only takes a small mistake, and then we have another casualty event.
Do you have a sense for how long this has been going on and this ability to just do that?
Since the new barricades went up. So they're designed to be easily rolled into place, dropped down using a ratchet tool, and then they're supposed to be anchored to the ground. The problem is there's no anchor points in the ground. There were no holes that were ever drilled into Bourbon Street where it would anchor into. So they easily move into position, they drop, and it's basically like moving a heavy piece of furniture. So you put enough pressure against it, it's going to move.
So you've been able to capture this on video going back to right after they started deploying this equipment?
Right. Absolutely. So it really didn't take long for people to realize that the barricades could easily be moved. And so it was, it's been a problem since the barricades were in place.
Have you been in communication with anyone? I mean, has any city official called you just out of curiosity to say, hey, can I see what you're talking about?
We work a lot with the boots on the ground in the 8th District. And so we have been comparing those from the very beginning. They've been noticing it. They've been sending it up the chain, from what I understand. We've been making notifications directly to the 8th District. It's our understanding that the Mayor's Office of Homeland Security Emergency Preparedness was advised. But it's also, you know, how can somebody not know this was going on? It's, you know, the police officers saw it. They were reporting it up the chain. And then anybody that was on Bourbon Street, yourself, people that work there, tourists, locals, you walk on Bourbon Street and there's a decent chance that you might see this happen yourself.
Have you been able to capture any city employee or NOPD for that matter, or the criminal sheriffs that see these barricades wide open, put them back in place?
When the NOPD officers see them open, they go and, you know, they move them. Sometimes, actually, if a person is stuck behind the barricade and they reach out to the 8th District, if possible, an officer might walk out there and go open the barricade and help that person get their vehicle off of Bourbon Street safely. So they're doing what they can to help make everything safe. And when they do see the barricades open, we've seen them close them.
Would it make sense to just make Bourbon Street a no parking area except for deliveries? I mean, and then
that's above my pay grade.
I'm sitting here thinking if we have this and that's one of the causes, we could eliminate that cause by saying you can't park on Bourbon Street, right? It's only delivery trucks. It would make delivery of goods a lot easier. I mean, you know,
that would certainly make things safer. And but also, like right now, there's another question. Why aren't the vehicles that are remaining on Bourbon Street immobilized or towed away? So our understanding is that there's no towing enforcement at night. So at the very least, it would be nice if someone were to go ahead and to boot any parked vehicles on Bourbon Street after hours that they can't move. It would also be nice if somebody, you know, the city's been quick to rip up the streets in the French Quarter. We're talking about some small holes on Bourbon Street for the anchor points for the barricades. Why not drill some small holes on Bourbon Street so that these barricades can actually work as designed? So there's a lot of questions.
You know, my concern, a tourist coming to town, they don't exactly know where they're going. You know, I know better than to turn on Bourbon Street, right? In fact, I don't remember the last time I traveled down Bourbon Street. Just because I know it tends to get backed up, you know, there could be some walking parade or something going on. So I just don't do it. I avoid it. But if you have a tourist that's driving into the city and they turn on Bourbon Street and they get to the next corner and there's a barricade, you compel somebody to back up an entire block?
I mean, so hopefully the barricades are erected on both sides. Now, that could certainly happen if somebody were to push a barricade.
But you can't guarantee that.
Of course.
But you're not guaranteeing that, right? Because, you know, it could be that they just move one side up, right?
Exactly.
Is my point.
Exactly. So it's just people that find themselves in a bit of trouble. They turn. They don't know. They find themselves on Bourbon Street in the middle of a bunch of people. So if the barricades were anchored down, then we wouldn't have to worry about that so much.
Yeah. Let's pivot real quick. Let's talk about your business model. It's been a huge success. It's helped solve a lot of crime. You know, we with the onset of AI, I think it's going to ultimately become even more effective, more real time, if that's even possible. Where do you see this moving with the assistance of AI?
Oh, wow. In a number of really good directions. Of course, you have to be socially responsible with the technology as well. So
sure.
We're using facial recognition, clothing recognition, license plate recognition. We can detect when illegal dumping of trash to people, jumping fences, intruding into areas where they shouldn't be. There's any number of different things that we can use AI and do use AI to automatically bring our attention to. So, case in point, of course, our new vehicle detection system for Bourbon Street that will very soon be alerting the NOPD when a vehicle travels down Bourbon Street after hours.
Yeah, because, hello, Houston, we have a problem, right? The vehicle's not supposed to be there.
Exactly. So it'll be a good way for them to know, basically receive an alert live and in real time as it's happening that there's a vehicle traveling. So, of course, we have, due to police, due to attrition, we don't have as many officers as we would like to have. They're spread very thin on Bourbon. So if you have officers that are down on the 600 block and somebody, drives their vehicle onto the 100 block or the 200 block, there's a good chance that officer might not see it. So with our system, it'll be able to go ahead and automatically alert the 8th District Station as well as officers that have our mobile app on their phone.
Yeah, I often thought if I had control of that space, the first thing I would do is get an agreement to run fiber across all of that rooftop and just be able to move images and everything else on a really reliant platform, have a level of redundancy. And much like I think they call it the Ring of Fire in London, in the London financial market. Is that right? Do you know?
But we all know it's pretty effective over there. The way that we're doing it, where all of our cameras are on people's homes, businesses, churches, and schools, and we're really not having problems with connectivity because we're connecting to hard lines in the homes and the businesses. The weak link usually in these type of systems is when, especially 4G, Wi-Fi, with all the people that are in the French Quarter, all the RF noise, those technologies really do not work. It's just too much congestion, radio congestion in the French Quarter and the downtown area. So as long as you're connected to a hard line, whether it be Cox, AT&T, or fiber, then it's very reliable. So we've been using tapping into people's internet, home internet, for 15 years now. And our system is extraordinarily reliable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I was just saying, I mean, it's just one of those things that I would want to see accomplished, because I really believe that the utilization of your technology, if appropriately weaved into the NOPD operationally, and I know that we've had these friction points, for a while now, that we could eliminate some human capital needs. And I don't think that you may want to opine about that, but I really believe that that technology, the value proposition of it, I don't know that we have fully recognized, what we could ultimately do. Your thoughts?
So it's why we created the system. So it's a very effective force multiplier. It's the means for the public to rally behind law enforcement and help. So it's a lot of people want to help law enforcement in their mission to make communities safer places. And by hosting a camera is a very easy way for them to go ahead and do it. So have we tapped the full potential of it? No. A lot of that has to do with the police attrition problem. We've gone from with the NOPD being proactive to, as we, manpower went down, to being reactive. Now, some of the holes we've been able to fill very greatly with Troop NOLA. They're amazing. They're proactive. When the NOPD can be proactive, it's amazing. But realistically, there are occasions where we're seeing things. We're seeing wanted subjects walking the street, and we have trouble seeing them get picked up because there's no available units nearby to go pick them up. So we sometimes see crimes in progress, and there's no units available. So there's great potential with this. The system itself is working great. I wish we had more officers, and you know, that's something that would really go ahead and make this work better.
Brian, we're visiting with Brian Lagarde, Executive Director of Project NOLA. How many years have you been doing this?
over 15 years.
Yeah, I was going to say,
program, it's been going on for a little while.
That's what I figured, around 15 years. And what's amazing is that your consumer confidence in your company has continued to go up every year. And I can't say that about many vendors that are out there, but I talk to a lot of people that are part of your program. They love you. I mean, they love the company. They love the participation. They feel like they're giving back to their community, and they are. You've created a mindset that people really want to help you help others.
Thank you. Thank you so very much for the extremely kind words. So we certainly try. We're dedicated as a nonprofit. So we're not in it for the money. We're not looking to monetize the data. Frankly, a lot of this comes very easy to us because we're not answering to bankers, investors. We're doing what helps law enforcement, which makes sense. And because we've been doing this longer than, frankly, most anyone else, I've been designing camera systems since the 90s, digital camera systems since the 90s. So we have a bit of a head start, a lot of experience, and we're doing our own R&D. So we're not using third-party data farms. All of our servers live at UNO, at our offices. The whole thing's just come together. And it's truly powered by the public. Were it not for the public hosting our cameras on their homes, businesses, churches, schools, this wouldn't exist. So it's a wonderful thing to be part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I remember some crimes that we were able to solve in Jefferson Parish because of the video that y'all captured, which is actually, you know, had young kids lifting door handles on cars with other kids standing there with an automatic weapon, scanning the houses in case somebody walked out. I mean, it was chilling.
Scary stuff.
And the quality of the image has really improved as well, right?
Exactly. And then the capabilities. So, you know, once upon a time, we've always been able to capture really good, vivid images of people's faces. But now our AI, we're able to more easily track that individual from, you know, before they even went out to go commit the crimes. So it takes us to an entirely different part of the city or even different jurisdictions. So it's not just Orleans Parish. Of course, we have cameras in Jefferson, but it's the surrounding jurisdictions as well. We're actually feeding into all these different real-time crime centers around the state. And then, of course, we're national now, so, you know, and then beyond. So it's creating citywide crime camera programs, regional crime camera programs, and the ability to track perpetrators before and after the crime, where we sometimes see them after they steal your car, after they burglarize your vehicle. They go back home and they're dancing in the street with your stolen firearm. These are the different parts of a crime that we often see.
Yeah. Well, back to our original topic. Well, first, let me just say to you, congratulations on your success. But back to our original topic, I certainly hope that somebody somewhere figures out a remediation to this barricade issue on Bourbon Street. I mean, we spent a lot of time, effort, money, overtime talking about security, and the fact that we can just move the barrier, a group of folks can just move the barrier, is really disappointing. I mean, it's just, in my view, I can only say it one way. It's a failure in execution. And, you know, and that's been a challenge for the city on a number of fronts, and hopefully they get it resolved. But thank you for bringing this to the forefront and sharing these images with the 8th District. Hopefully they're able to get something done.
Absolutely, and we're expecting Ann Kirkpatrick to be visiting our office sometime soon. She recently reached out. She's looking forward to seeing the system herself, the new vehicle intrusion system. So we're moving forward together.
That is awesome news. I'm a big supporter of hers, and I'm glad to hear that she reached out. Brian Lagarde, Executive Director of Project NOLA, thank you for your time, your insight, your effort. We truly appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Brian Lagarde, Executive Director of Project NOLA. We'll be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with
us. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
With us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Neil. How you doing?
Jeff, last night and this morning, I was looking for the silver lining. I've yet to find it. Help me out here, my friend.
Yeah, you know, it was a gross day out in Chicago, and it was kind of a gross game. You know, nothing seemed to work, mechanically, or, you know, there's a lot of things that did not, there's a lot of things that broke on that trip. Let's just put it that way. But, I think this is just kind of where you are as a team, right? As an organization, you know, there's going to be these games that just look ugly and get away from you. And the reaction is going to be, wow, this is the worst thing ever. And in reality, it's, hey, you know, this team just doesn't have the talent right now to make up for games that don't go the way you hope they would go, right? You know, what we talked about Spencer Rattler all year long, what is his kind of superpower been? It has been protecting the football. It has been not turning the ball over. You know, he's played in such a way that's given you chances to win. It hasn't always been the case that he's elevated the team to wins, but he's put you in positions by protecting the football, by being smart, not taking unnecessary risks. And that just did not happen yesterday. And you kind of saw how, when you don't do that, how a game can go for you. And a lot of times you look at it and you say, yeah, okay, some bad luck. I mean, I think the interceptions, with the exception of that last one on the fourth down where you just had to try to make a play, you know, they were bad throws. The throw to Tipton was behind him. Like, Tipton, there's a play to be made there. The ball was left behind him. Like, that's on the quarterback. Chris Olave went out the play before. That's why Tipton was on the field. So maybe the timing between those guys wasn't perfect, but that's on the quarterback, right? The throw to Shaheed, you know, it's tough. I haven't seen the All-22 yet to know whether there was, you know, that was on Shaheed or if he had a role in it. But, you know, that's a 1st and 10 play. They're driving the ball. You don't need that play right there, right? Like, you can throw that ball away, live to play another down, and that's just like, those are the type of moments that Spencer had avoided up until that game, and it just didn't go his way. And I don't know if maybe the Caleb Williams thing, he was pressing a little bit going against DA. I don't know. It just wasn't a good game for him from a game management perspective, from a you know, offense management perspective. And frankly, you know, there were 3 interceptions. There could have been a lot more. I mean, there was 4 or 5 throws in that game that the Bears just couldn't catch. You know, there was one where Nashawn Wright and I think it was Kevin Byard literally collided with each other. Either one of them could have intercepted the ball if the other guy wasn't there. and they got bailed out. There was another drive that just went terribly, and they got bailed out. I think that was before the Nashon Wright interception, who's actually Rajon Wright's brother, who's on the Saints right now. You know, and it just didn't work. And, you know, I'll give him credit. He did kind of lock back in. There was a point in that game that the Saints had a chance, you know, to turn it into something, and it just never kind of clicked. That was just a game that from the start, at least on offense, just didn't go the right way. And, you know, they need to come back and recover and bounce back. And I think they will. But, you know, there's some headwinds now with some injuries that, you know, you're going to have to figure out. And, you know, you're 1-6. You know, that's what you are. You are 1-6. There's no putting lipstick on that and pretending it's anything other than what it is. Like, that's this season. You're basically can stop talking about the playoffs. And you're not even halfway through it. So, you know, you got to find some positivity somewhere.
My big concern, a couple of things. The Bears did not play really well either, right? I mean, their quarterback passing ratio was less than Rattler's. 10 penalties, 92 yards. You know, there were several things that they did that they really didn't do well, and actually some of the things that they did kind of kept the Saints in the game a couple of times during the game. But when I talked to Mike Haas at the beginning of the week, I had seen the Bears play last week, and it was kind of like they're physical. And I was really concerned about their physicality versus ours, and I think it revealed itself yesterday. I don't know that we stood up to them physically.
I think you're right, and you know they definitely came out in that game with a lot of energy. And I thought the Saints' defense early in the game played pretty well. You know, like Caleb Williams. The reason that game was as close as it was is because they basically took away Caleb Williams. You know, he did his thing where he kind of like jogged around in the backfield and juked a bunch of times, but he didn't make any plays doing that. There was one that DeMario Davis kind of he had him. It looked like he had for a sack, and he was able to just get it out to the running back, and that was a nice play. But you got to give the Saints defensive backs credit for plastering, because they had to cover for a long time, and I can't recall a single instance where Caleb did his thing and he extended, and he actually made a play downfield. So you got to give him credit for that. The run game on both sides of the ball. That's where the Bears dominated, in the trenches on both sides of the ball. And you know, that was surprising to me. I thought the Saints were going to be able to go in there and run the ball. And I don't know I think the Bears got a lot more juice, and Dennis Allen kind of downplayed it throughout the week. But that defense was playing with a lot of energy. They were playing for their coach a little bit, and it's tough to match that, I think. And I don't know if they did. I don't know if the Saints did. It was a gross day. It was cold. It was raining. The sun did come out in the second half, and I think, you know, as that kind of wore on, I think the defense got worn down, and that's where a lot of the rushing yards came from. The second half, they really just got gashed at over and over again. And especially when the offense just isn't sustaining drives, it becomes difficult. But, no, I think you're spot on. I think they just got out-physicaled in that game. And, you know, DeAndre Swift is running well. Kyle Monanga was running well. And it just kind of got away from him.
Yeah, I mean, at one time, I think we had 4 yards.
Well, I mean, not that they only had 4 yards. It was that it was like late in the first half and they only had 4 yards.
It was like, yeah. And that was, you know, and I was getting ready to add that qualifier, but it was like, because I was kind of in and out of the house watching the game, and I was like, what? And I couldn't believe, you know. And they end up with 44. And I think what did the Bears have, like 222 or something?
Correct.
Yards rushing. So obviously that's not even close. You can't win games with 44 yards rushing. I mean, you're putting too much pressure on the pass for this quarterback, and he's not ready for that.
Yeah, and I mean, you just allow the defense to rush the passer, really, because they know you had to give up on them. I think they only ran it 17 times, and I can't even be critical of them giving up on the run because you weren't getting anywhere, you know? It's tough whenever you get into a game where you don't feel like you can run for a third and short or a fourth and short, that makes life very difficult on you. And that's what happened late in the game. I mean, they had a third and one. They threw the ball twice. You know, and I asked Kellen Moore after the game if losing Eric McCoy was a factor. He said no. And I think he's telling the truth because, you know, there was a fourth down in the game that they had Eric McCoy and they didn't even, you know, like you can get stuffed on fourth down. You know, most of the time it's like, oh, it's an inch short. I mean, they didn't get anything. I mean, they were stopped at the line of scrimmage on a fourth and one. And it's strange because it's not what we've seen out of this offense. They have been able to run the ball pretty well, pretty effectively. And it was very frustrating to watch. And, you know, I guess if the silver lining for this game would be you were able to hit some explosive plays. You know, Juwan Johnson had an explosive play. Chris Olave had two explosive plays and another touchdown. You know, that big play before halftime was, I mean, the game felt over in the second quarter and like the energy was low, and that long, the 58 yard catch, the 21 yard touchdown, then coming out of halftime, you had the 14 yard touchdown. I thought that was big for him because he's an important player for this team. And yeah, it's just, if that's all you have as an offense is the ability to throw it deep, you know, you can take that away. And they did after that point. It's just not a lot of positives to take out of that game, unfortunately.
So where do we, your gut, your intuition, I mean, where do we find ourselves right now? I mean, we got Tampa Bay coming in town next Sunday. I guess it's still a 3:05 kickoff. I don't know if it's been changed or not. And then you have the Rams.
Yeah.
I mean, so you got two tough games coming up. You know, I'm not sure what Tampa Bay's record is, but the last time I checked, it was pretty good. And I don't know if they won or they were off this past weekend and paid attention to it, but that's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, they actually play the Lions today. So that's going to be a tough game.
Oh, that's right. They play tonight. Yeah.
And
yeah.
That'll be a really interesting game to watch, right? That's because the Bucs are the opposite of the Saints in the sense that the Saints have been in games and they just haven't found a way to win them. The Bucs have been in the same situation. They've just pretty much every week found the winning plays, kind of like Sean Payton's Broncos yesterday, who played one of the most ridiculous games I've ever seen, 33 points in the fourth quarter. Like, that's how you win games, right? Like, there's teams that go out there and understand, like, you know, the first three quarters might have gone a certain way, but we're going to find the winning plays in winning moments. And that's just what the Saints haven't been able to do. But, yeah, I mean – yeah, you can't feel great about your odds this week and or next week. You know, you at least have this game at home. Hopefully you can come back home and kind of find that energy that you just seem to be lacking out in Chicago. This hasn't been a team that's played particularly well on the road, but they have played well at home. And I don't think that's a mirage. I think this team should play better at home. I think most teams play better at home. The issue for the last several years has been you didn't feel like there was a home field advantage. I do think that exists now. So that's whatever that can be said for. But no, I mean, you got to find something. You got to find a combination because at a certain point in this season, it stops being about this season. It starts being about next season. And I think you're kind of teetering on the edge of that right now. And then the next couple weeks are going to kind of decide whether you keep kind of hanging out on that ledge or if you just get pushed completely over it.
And if we didn't have bad luck, we'd have no luck at all because the offensive line injuries just continue, right? I mean, this has been like musical chairs out there. So McCoy do we know what his injury was?
So, you know, they were all healthy going into this game, which was nice to say, and that's not the case anymore. It's an arm injury. It sounds like a bicep injury. He had a similar injury last year. I can tell you when he came out of that injury tent, you can usually see on these guys' faces how significant they think the injuries are. And I would imagine it's significant. Kellen Moore after the game, who usually doesn't give out any injury information, said it's concerning, which, you know, you can probably amp that up by 10 in terms of the translation of what he means by that. I would be surprised if we see McCoy back for a while, and they're going to have to figure that out. Luke Fortner is the guy they traded for in the preseason, and I imagine he'll be the starter if McCoy's injury is significant.
But the significance of that, not just in its own right, it's significant, but you have, a Rattler back there. You want to have the best of the best because, you know, he's still learning the system. He's still getting acclimated here, and it just puts more pressure on a young quarterback.
Yeah, and McCoy, you know, they call him like a multiplier. Like, it's not just that he's a really good player, it's that he makes the players around him a lot better. And so you're not just losing your starting center, you're losing that. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm a little concerned. We saw what it looked like after he went out last year, and they really struggled. And so, yeah, these next few games, if you don't have him, that's going to make an impact. There's no question.
No doubt. Well, we'll continue to just hang tight. Actually, I think I'm going to the game Sunday. Hopefully we'll see competitive play. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. We really appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too, man. Have a good one.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it was not a good weekend for football in the state of Louisiana, with the exception of Tulane, folks. Tulane is now 6-1. They beat Army 24-17 right there at Yulman State at this here in New Orleans, Yulman Stadium. And their next opponent is University of Texas at San Antonio. They play away. They're off this weekend, the following weekend, October 3rd. Actually, it's a Thursday night game. They play on the 30th. So congrats to Tulane at 6-1. The Tigers, unfortunately, that was an ugly game. They fall to 5-2, and they've got Texas A&M coming into Tiger Stadium on the 25th, not sure what the start time is. Then they play Alabama, and then they play Arkansas. And they finish out the season. Well, they have, I guess that's Western Kentucky. And then they play Oklahoma, number 11 Oklahoma right now, on November the 29th. So they still got a lot of tough football to go at 5-2. And, of course, people are talking about buying out Brian Kelly's contract at the low price of, what, $52 or $58 million. That chatter's flying all over the place right now. Actually, he has a damn good record at LSU, but for whatever reason, it's not enough. And here we are. We're rocking and rolling. But they just didn't play well. That was an ugly, ugly game. They had no answer for Pavia at all. And that continues to be an issue for LSU, this roller coaster ride. They're not consistent in a whole lot of what they're doing. We're starting to see that reveal itself with the Saints as well. And it looks like they suffer from some of the same ailments, quite frankly. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about the First Brands crash and its significance. Good news at Tulane, France in chaos again, federal shutdown update, and AI fraud, and a couple of other topics as well.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.